apologies. And can we have a list of those present and those apologies received?
Sure. From the CCNSO, we've got Hugo Akiri, Becky Burr, Keith Davidson, Chris Disdain, Stephen Deerhake, Daniel Kalhef, Eberhard Lister, Patricia Pobleta, Catherine Reynolds, Bill Samick, Dottis Fox DeBlanc. From the GAC, we have Frank March and Anna Neves. From the liaisons, we have Cheryl Magnanol, ALAC. From staff, we've got Bart Boswinkle, Kim Davies, Christina Bernie, and apologies, Martin Boyle, Paulus Nirenda, and Suzanne Riddell.
So we have an apology from Nigel.
And
I haven't noted any.
Okay,
was there an apology from Nigel?
No, I was just asking.
Okay.
There was an apology from Nigel. If not, I am sending it in now.
Thank you.
Thank you. No other apologies? Did that record everybody who's on the call? Thank you.
Keith, can I just stop you for a second? I've got sound coming out of my... I'll mute my speakers. There we go. Sorry. I didn't know Adobe Connect would provide me with sound, but it does. How very impressive.
Sorry, Yap is here as well. I just didn't notice him. Yap.
Okay, I've just muted myself.
Can I say something, Chris, on that?
Yes. No, let's not get sidetracked, Elle.
Well, Elle does have his hand up, so...
Okay. This is about the Adobe Connect. Christina has finally, after some serious nagging of several months, gotten the technical people to set it up so that we are getting in the connecting the bridge of the telephone to Adobe. And Daniel and I, we are not dialed in. We are using the voice over internet, and the quality is better than over the telephone.
Sorry, what was the last sentence? That the voice quality was as good as, or not as good as?
Better, he said.
Better.
Better than the telephone.
Excellent. Okay.
And before I forget, just for trial purposes, using it on a tether on my 3G, so it can be done almost anywhere now.
Okay, anyway, so we have apologies and a list of those present. So our next item on the agenda is the meeting report from the 22nd of September. I guess everyone's had more than 2 weeks to have a look. So are there any issues or are there any matters arising from the minutes that are not being addressed on today's agenda? No comments regarding the meeting report? If not, we'll adopt it. Goodness me, there's a lot of background noise on this call. Can people please mute if they're not talking? Bernie, was there anything of critical importance arising from the meeting report that isn't otherwise addressed on the agenda?
No, sir.
Excellent. Okay, can we move on to significantly interested parties? And I notice there's been quite a lot of discussion on the list in the last 8 hours or 10 hours or so since I've been sleeping, so I'm not quite up to date. Bernie, have you kept up with the flow of information on the list, and do you want to take us through significantly interested parties?
Yes, to both, sir.
Thank you.
We'll start by putting up the document. That should be it. Okay. given we didn't have a proper go-through at our last meeting, which was just sort of an introduction, I guess we should do that on this call as a proper walk-through. That's my understanding of how we were going to proceed. Is that okay, sir? I'll take that as a yes. Okay. So, SIP. That's the name of the document. I'm not asking you to do anything depending on your relevant time zone. 1.1 is just quoting the DRDWG final report. I don't think there are any major issues there. The objectives are basically adjusted for this report from the consent document. Identify applicable policies and procedure statements. Analyze all past cases of redelegations versus interested parties, and identify issues versus applicable policies and procedures. Identify and analyze any issues arising. Develop recommendations and interpretations as appropriate. Is Section 2 okay for everyone? I see no hands. I hear no comments. We'll take that as an okay. Applicable policy statement. Oh, wow, ouch. RFC 1591, there's Section 3.4. Significantly interested parties in the domain should agree that the designated manager is the appropriate party. I think we're all fairly familiar with this clause, but just in case we're not, the full text is the IANA tries to have any contending parties reach agreement amongst themselves and generally takes no action to change things unless the contending parties agree. Only in cases where the designated manager has substantially misbehaved would the IANA step in. However, it is appropriate for interested parties to have some voice in selecting the designated manager. On the issues, there's no documentation identifying who should be included in the parties. There's no documentation as to how these parties should be contacted or how they should agree that the designated manager is the appropriate party. And there is no documentation as to how to evaluate the input to see if it meets the requirement. I'll call it here. Are there any issues to this point? I see no hands. I hear no comments. All right, 312. Which
sorry, Benny. Eberhard just raised his hand. Eberhard.
Yes, sir.
Can you just scroll? Why are you writing in 3111? There is no documentation identifying what should be included in significantly when the IANA says. Interested party. We should have both. There is no documentation identifying. There is no documentation identifying who should be included in significantly interested and interested parties, and how to determine this or how to determine the difference.
Yes, and you are asking me.
Becky has raised on one of her last emails where there is there a difference between interested party and significantly interested party. You are in this fragment from the this quotation, you use there is both terms, but you only refer to the interested party in your issues. It's still also not defined who is an interested party.
Ah, okay. Hold on a second here. I will pull up RFC 1591 to see I didn't mess up the quote, and I will be right with you. Dun, 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 dun. Okay. Come on. 3133. Okay, so the beginning of Section 3.4 states, as stated in the document, significantly interested parties in the domain should agree that the designated manager is the appropriate party. And The second paragraph has contending parties, and the third paragraph has only interested parties, as is presented here. And so your question goes to my question, which my issues, which are listed as there is no documentation, should be included in significantly interested parties. One of the things after looking at this, I think we generally came to the conclusion it was maybe unwise to try and differentiate between significantly interested parties and interested parties. And so basically, I think what we've done in the document is try to keep to that line that there are only significantly interested parties.
I don't agree with that, because we later somewhere said we cannot say that everybody is a significantly interested party. We cannot do that.
I think the point we're trying to get to is there are two issues we're looking at. There's the point of 3.4 and there's the point of 3.6. And if you're not a significantly interested party, or if you're not an interested enough party for your input to be weighed, is it really worth considering? I guess there are ways of looking at it. I'm not sure how you would like to process parties' input that are not significantly interested.
I haven't got the other document in front of me, but there was some significant discussion going on about what a significantly interested party is supposed to be able to do. And I think we should differentiate between interested party and significant.
Well, we can certainly take it up as a discussion. Right now, what I'm telling you is the document as it stands right now has been built around the concept that there's only one class of interested parties, and we're calling them significantly interested parties. If we understand what we want to do with the various types of interested parties and we want to differentiate, we can fix that. That's not a problem. But probably we could save that discussion when we get into the recommendations in Section 7.
Okay, I see Chris has his hand raised. Chris.
Thanks, Keith. I think you're right, Bernie, maybe we can leave this to Section 7, but I think we need to get clear about what it is we're trying to do, because I think there's consensus, or there seems to me to be consensus, that you need to have a significant interest to be part of the discussion, or to have your opinion taken into account. That significant interest isn't necessarily limited to being within the country's borders, because, as we've said, if you're registrants and you're outside, you probably do have an interest or a significant interest. The danger is that we only need to split between significant interest and interest if there are two levels of input. If you assume that there's only one level of input, which is you have input if you're significantly interested, and if you're not, you don't have input, then you don't need to draw a distinction. You just say, these are the parties. And the other thing I want to say is I think it strikes me that we are actually probably going to have no choice but to at least attempt to list the sorts of parties who would be acceptable as significantly interested, even though it's something that I'm not particularly keen on doing.
Thanks, Chris. Does that satisfy your question, Eberhard?
I just pointed out some things that I saw. I agree with Chris that we will probably have to sort of list what we consider significantly. But if you say anybody into, that means a single user can say I'm an interested party and he has some say in this matter. I think the distinction is made in the RFC, and it's probably helpful to use it.
Yeah.
What's the distinction in the RFC between significantly interested and interested?
It doesn't try
two separate words.
Yeah, I don't think it tries to identify or
no.
You know, provide a definition. And I guess what we're seeking to do is say there are interested parties, and I guess interested parties are anyone who uses that particular domain name for any purpose whatsoever or has any issue with it in terms of sovereign rights or anything like that, but a significantly interested party is something else, and we're seeking to define that being more appropriate as people who should have some say in terms of delegations and redelegations without trying to define what an interested party is.
Mm.
Because I think the definition would be too broad and therefore become meaningless, I think. Eberhard?
For example, a single user will probably be interested. But let's say you have a registrar who has got 30% of all domain names, I would think he would be significantly interested. And whether I agree on what the powers should be, but I think we should make a distinction.
Well, that's fine, but the problem with that is that you've just illustrated that problem. So I've got 30%. That makes me significantly interested. What about if I've got 10?
Yeah. 12,
or
what if I'm a registrant who has one domain name, but it's $1 billion a year turnover on that website, as opposed to another registrant who has one domain name, doesn't have a website and doesn't use it for email, has just merely parked the domain name. Would one of those be significantly interested and the other merely interested? I think, it would be just too hard to be absolutely clear and come up with concise definition terms. So probably better to just try and identify who significantly interested might be.
I agree. We don't need to define, but we should draw a distinction that there are interested parties and significantly interested. The details we don't need to have to deal with today.
But, Al, I suppose my point is, do we really need to do that? Can we not simply say there are significantly interested parties and everyone else?
I guess there probably wouldn't be any harm in 3.1.1.1.1. There is no documentation identifying who should be included in interested parties or significantly interested parties or how to determine this. Would that cover what and then just acknowledge that both interested parties and significantly interested parties are mentioned in RFC 1591? Be the level of clarity that you'd be chasing, Eberhard?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Excellent. Okay, Bernie and I will work on some words here. Okay, carry on, Bernie.
We're just taking a note. Okay. 312. Section 3.6 of RFC 1591 has, it's also very helpful for IANA to receive communications from other parties that may be concerned or affected by the transfer. Here we don't have interested parties or significantly interested parties. We have parties. So under the issues we have, there's no documentation of who should be included in other parties that may be concerned or affected by the transfer to determine this. There is no documentation as to how these parties should communicate with IANA or what these communications should include, and there is no documentation as to how to evaluate the input to see if it meets the requirements. questions, thoughts, comments on 312. Going once.
It doesn't appear to be.
All right. So we move on then to the GAC Principles 2005. There is one section that seems relevant. It's 7.1. Under principle, delegation and redelegation is a national issue and should be resolved nationally in accordance with national laws, taking into account the views of all local stakeholders and the rights of the existing CCTLD registry. So here the terminology seems to have shifted to local stakeholders. However, if you go through all of the GAC documents, there is no documentation of who should be included in local stakeholders either, or how to determine this. There is no documentation as to who these local stakeholders should communicate to or how they should do it, and there is no documentation as to how to evaluate the input to see if it meets the requirements. Basically, the same problems we had under RFC 1591. Are there any questions, thoughts, or comments on this one?
Bill has his hand raised. Bill.
Two things, actually. I don't actually see the section that you're discussing on my screen, Bernie.
You don't see what section, Bill?
Well, it hasn't moved past 3.1.2.
Well, the one I'm looking
Bill,
at...
Bill, you can move it yourself.
Oh, I can? Didn't used to be able to.
No, that's not the way it used to work. Unless it changed, but mine right now reads 321.
Oh, I am moving it myself. Goodness.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So maybe you didn't move it for me, and that's maybe I'm in charge. Okay. And then the other issue is. Sorry. What? Yeah. Well, it's about time I could at least move the screen around. So the other issue is earlier in this section, much earlier. Now that I can scroll around, I can look for it. We have applicable policy statements, and, of course, as far as I know, we've never concluded or agreed that the GAC principles is a policy statement. We've called it a guideline, I believe. And so if we're going to be looking at the GAC principles just for matters of consistent treatment, I think it would be good to change number three, applicable policy statements, to applicable policy statements and guidelines.
Good catch, yes, that is correct.
Yeah, that's it for me.
Well spotted, Bill. Eberhard also has his hand raised. Eberhard.
It says taking into account the views of all local stakeholders. What value are we assigning to that word all here in this context?
We're not assigning any value. We're just pointing out that we don't know what it refers to or how to treat that input.
Should we?
Well, that's the point we deal with in recommendations. We're just listing
The point is
that are known, and we're trying to list off the issues we have with the things that are known. I don't think we're trying to resolve anything. If there are other issues around the use of the word all, maybe we can put it in there, but I'm not sure what you're going for, Eberhard.
The point is, how do we enumerate a local stakeholders? What value we assign to it? If there is two people assigning... Well, first, if we ever define what a local stakeholder is, then how do we make sure that we capture all, that we take into account the uses of all local stakeholders?
Yes, that's the point I was trying to bring out in 3221. And, well, actually, all of the issues is how do you identify them, how they communicate their input, and how do you evaluate it? And I think that goes to exactly what you're talking about as issues.
The point is, we identify who are local stakeholders. How do we make sure that we have reached everybody?
Al, we're not trying to solve that problem right now. We're just noting it as a problem. That's the point of this section, is noting issues. Now, you seem to be agreeing that it's an issue. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I think...
I do agree. My point is, I think your issue is not all-encompassing.
What would you like to add to it as issues?
I don't know how to formulate or to phrase it, but the point is, I think we need to look at what does it... It doesn't mean take into account the views of local stakeholders. It says you must take all of them into account. How do we go about that?
Well, if it's going to make you happy, I can change 3221, the quote part, to say all local stakeholders. Will that make it easier?
That does make it easier indeed.
Fine. It was not meant to be exclusive. I will be glad to fix that, Eberhard.
No, it's not a criticism, but I think it's an issue.
Okay, that's noted. Bill, you have your hand up. Is that because it's still up, or you have a new question? I think Bill's hand's gone down. Please continue, Benny.
All right, so that would close off Section 3.2. Moving on to Section 4, relevant procedures. The only one we have is our standard one, understanding the CCTLD delegation and redelegation procedure. The following sections are relevant to the topic of consent. Sorry, that's from an old copy and paste to be fixed on 4.1. Those parties served by the CCTLD, we're on 411 now. Those parties served by the CCTLD are asked to show that they support the request and that it meets the interests and needs of the local internet community. The next one is from the section titled Submitting the Request, information showing the change serves the local interest in the country. And 413 from section 2, documentation showing that a request serves the local interest is the standard stuff we know about. Crucial to the request are statements of support from the local internet community. This documentation should provide information demonstrating that the request would be in the interest of the internet community served by the CCTLD. Good examples of this documentation include statements from national ISPs and ISP associations, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to read the whole thing. And the last one is 414, government contact. In this short section, the applicant should provide documentation indicating that any appropriate government officials have been informed about the request. A statement of support from the relevant government department or agency is effective in meeting this requirement. So as far as I could tell, those were most of the relevant parts relative to significantly interested parties or interested parties for a delegation and redelegation. Does that sound okay, or did I miss anything? Going once, going twice. Okay, sounds all right. Let's see what we...
Eberhard just raised his hand in the nick of time.
Okay.
Eberhard.
This is ICP1, understanding the TLD delegation and redelegation procedure. That's ICP1, isn't it?
No, this is taken from the document on the IANA website, which is called exactly what I stated above.
Understanding the CCT delegation and redelegation procedure.
Yes. Now, we're not, the other thing that's important, I think, is as Nigel noted on our last call, procedures have been moved to a separate section to indicate we're not considering them as policy. What we're doing is we're looking at what's currently documented as procedures to help us understand the way IANA looks at the policy. So this is not a question that we're trying to interpret this or anything else like that. This is for information.
Yeah, I think it's worth saying that, Bernie, in the document.
We can do that, yes, sir.
Because people forget, and then they start referring to it as being authoritative when actually it's not.
Okay. I'll add a note to that.
No, I'm not.
Are we okay on that?
Let's say yes.
Okay. I missed that on my end. All right. The issues... There is no mention of SIP, other parties, or stakeholders. Instead, there are those parties served by the CCTLD, local internet community, and government contacts. The terminology should be defined or edited to use the terms of RFC 1691. There could be a conflict of interest in having the applicant provide the SIP documentation of support for a delegation or redelegation request, as is the current procedure. There is no documentation as to how to evaluate if the SIP support meets the requirements. The relationship between serving the local interest and obtaining support for a delegation or redelegation is unclear. Should the government have a special standing as described in this procedure? So those are the issues. Again, these are procedures. They're not policies, but when looking at them versus the policies, we've come up with those notions. Are there any questions here? I'm going to count to five on this one. One, going twice, going three times, four,
we
five.
Ever had. Ever had.
Yes, sir.
I have never agreed to even considering this document from 4.NA, and I'm sure a few others don't, because it's purely unilateral. Should we this in some other form, that this document has been is unilateral and not accepted by part of the community?
I have no idea. We're not referring to it as policy. We're saying that this is what is currently in use. As you know, we've had this discussion several times.
I think we've dealt with this already, because Bernie's going to put a note in that says that it's at the beginning, that says it's not policy, it's not authoritative, it's being referred to merely as a practice document.
Does that answer your question, Al?
Yeah, then if we have asked several times and we've asked it to be edited, can it be, please be edited?
If by that you mean including the words Chris just talked about, that's what we've agreed to do.
Okay. Can that be in the next version of the document then?
It will be. On our last call, I thought just separating it out would make it clear enough, but obviously we're going to go one more step and we'll be very clear on that. Okay, Al?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. 416, note, IANA has confirmed it has no references as to who should be included as the interested party or how to evaluate if the input received meets the requirements as documented in RFC 1591 or GAC principles. Once IANA is satisfied that there is no additional input that will be provided by the applicant regarding SIP support for the request, it will consider the information gathering for this requirement complete. The ICANN board, which has no published criteria for evaluating this input, will consider the SIP input when reviewing the request for approval. Are there any questions on that?
Eberhard has his hand raised. Eberhard.
Martin started to mention or to refer to IANA as the IANA function manager. And we have at some stage decided that we should differentiate between IANA as a function and IANA as an operator or something. Not refer to IANA in the context where it's like this as the IANA function manager.
I'll be glad to take the direction of the group on that. I don't have a particular interest either way. I think we've discussed this when we were in terminology, if I remember well, and there was some support for referring to IANA as the IANA contractor, I believe. I guess what we can do is put that out on the email list for discussion, make sure everyone's okay with it, and then we'll adjust accordingly if it turns out there's no opposition. Does that make sense, Mr. Chair?
Let's do that.
Would that be okay, Al?
Yes. I think it is proper to be as exact as we can be, and I think to avoid misunderstandings, we can refer to the function as a function and to the manager as a manager or contractor or whatever you term it.
Okay. We'll get some words around that, and you'll see an email consultation coming your way soon. All right. So that will close off Section 4 unless there are other questions or comments. Okay. I think that's about it. Moving along. Analysis of IANA reports on redelegations. Classification of support, given the documentation of support by either interested parties or government varies in IANA reports on redelegations. It is necessary to define a system to look at these things. It's basically exactly the same system we did with consent, except we're looking at significantly interested parties and government support and classifying all that input. And basically, we use the same terms, documented, government, 70% of cases of redelegation, 22% in the others, implied, 2%, 6%, not addressed, 0% for government, 32% for others, and noted 28% and 40%. So our issues are 521, 32% of redelegations are approved without IANA documenting any support from non-government significantly interested parties. For IANA reports where no information is given on support from non-governmental SIPs, information is rarely provided explaining or commenting on this absence. So basically, when you look at all the IANA reports on redelegation, what basically comes out is that the government support issue is never not addressed, while on all the other community inputs, about a third of the time, there is no documentation around that. And by the way, one of the things I've had in discussions with Kim is that this doesn't necessarily mean it's not there. It just means it's not in the IANA report, which by itself is a problem. But we should be clear on that. Are there any questions on Section 5? I'm not seeing anything, Mr.
Chair. Doesn't appear to be.
Pardon me?
There doesn't appear to be any questions, so continue.
All right. Section 6, summary and analysis of the issues. The number of terms used can lead to confusion. ICANN and IANA should use a single term when referring to SIP. RFC 1591 refers to SIP and parties that may be concerned or affected. The GAC principles refer to stakeholders, and IANA procedures refer to LIC and some other terms. So that's our first issue, is the multiplicity of terms. Are there any questions on that? 6.2, there is no documentation as to who can be considered a significantly interested party. The examples provided in the IANA procedures do not provide a definition of SIP. They provide some examples, but I don't think we have a good definition. Are there any questions?
I think Kim makes the interesting observation in the Adobe chat that SIP is a terrible acronym, also refers to Common Internet Protocol, which is dead right, but I suppose there's not much difference between a SIP and a lick, is there?
I'm not getting into that one.
Sorry,
I'm just going to save us some screen space. 6.3, relevant government or territorial authority rules in delegation and redelegation should be clarified. Questions, thoughts, comments? We're not answering the issue here. We're just saying it's an issue. We need to clarify it. I don't see anything. 6.4, having the applicant for a delegation or redelegation provide the documentation of SIP support allows for a conflict of interest on its part and SIP input. Questions? Comments? No, okay. There is no documentation as to how SIP input for a request will be evaluated. There is no requirement for IANA reports to clearly document and explain SIP support for a request. We've gone through this basically in the consent document. This is just a rehash of those words adjusted for significantly interested parties. So we've got, there is no policy or procedure requirement that IANA publish IANA reports on delegations or redelegations. IANA has published these reports for all delegations and redelegations since 2000. Publishing these reports is consistent with the ICANN bylaw requirement for accountability and transparency. These reports are, in most cases, the only publicly available documentation of delegations and redelegations beyond the ICANN board minutes, which often contain very limited information. There is now an expectation, at least from the CCTLD community, that IANA publish these reports for all delegations and redelegations. All right, that would close off Section 6. Any closing questions, comments?
Just a very small observation. I think 6.6.2, ICANN came into being in 1998, so perhaps deleting when ICANN came into being and leaving it as since 2000 is probably appropriate or adequate.
6.6.2. Noted. Will be fixed up in the next version. Any other questions, comments? Okay. On to the meat of the matter now. Section 7. We've laid it out as in the consent document. Basically, you've got 7.1, undertake the steps necessary to implement the following interpretations of policies. I'm going to just scoot down a bit beyond those to 7.2. Which is IANA should report to the GAC and the CCNSO at each ICANN meeting on the plan and progress to date in implementing these recommended guidelines, which is exactly the same thing from the consent document. Should ICANN IANA choose not to comply with the FOI working group recommended guidelines for any specific redelegation, it should provide the rationale for doing so in a public report, and any changes to the FOI recommended guidelines should be the subject of a formal public consultation as per ICANN standard procedures. So the layout is the same as in the consent document. What has changed are the specific interpretations, which we will go into next. But before we do that, is the general layout about how we've approached this okay, or are there any questions on that? I'm not hearing anything and I'm not seeing any hands raised, so we'll take it that that remains okay as an approach. All right, let's get into the meat of the matter. 711. ICANN and IANA should only use the term significantly interested parties when referring to persons whose input is being sought for a delegation or redelegation request, but who are not explicitly mentioned in the request. So, basically, a recommendation that we standardize on the term significantly interested party. Questions, thoughts, comments?
Oh, several hands just went up. We have Bill first, and then Al, and then Becky. So, Bill.
Oh, I was starting to feel pretty bad here. Thank you, Bill. All right. Yes, sir.
I have some concern about the phrasing. I'm assuming that what you're trying to say here is a significant interested party is someone whose input would be appreciated, general kind of classification. But the way I read the language is when referring to persons whose input is being sought, such persons being unknown to anyone, for a delegation or redelegation request. In other words, you're sort of defining this with an undefined description of these persons. I don't know if I'm making myself clear or not, but...
I think I understand. Your editing skills are always most welcome, but do you have something that would fix this? The general intent is just to get us to standardize on the term significantly interested party.
Well, if I had half a night to think about it, which is sometimes what I spend on one sentence, if you can believe it, I'd probably come up with something pretty felicitous, but right now I'm thinking maybe when referring to, and I'm not sure you want to say persons, you might want to say persons, entities, or organizations, whose opinion would...
You know who's good at this is Becky, so maybe...
Yeah, I'm going to pass it to Becky.
If everyone is okay, then maybe I can work on this with Becky. And we'll put it back on the mailing list and see how people feel.
Yeah, I think it should be somehow defined as entities or whatever who have something to bring to the table and who care.
Right. Can I just add one little... I can wait, Bernie, but before we go
No,
off,
go ahead. I'm done.
Okay. I just have one other problem, which is that the difference between interested parties and significantly interested parties, I know we're defining it here, but in actual English, it suggests sort of relatively more weight to the significantly interested parties, which may or may not be the case. That's my problem with the use of that term. Unless we're getting rid of interested parties and everybody's a significantly interested party. Because we don't know that in advance. Does that make sense?
Well, I think what we're trying to get to is, and I believe that was the core of Chris's argument, is we're probably only looking at considering the input from significantly interested parties. I think what we discussed with L in the Section 3 of this document is that we'll note that there are interested parties because RFC 1591 refers to them, actually refers to three types of parties, significantly interested parties, and other parties. So it was a big party in Section 3 of RFC 1591.
Right.
But I think what we're trying to get it down to, regardless of the specific word, is those persons, legal or moral, whose input will be considered in a delegation or redelegation request. And what I'm saying is there may be issues here, and maybe you and I can work
on
it.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. I understand.
Would that be okay?
Yep.
And maybe what we've got to do, addressing some of Bill's points, is that maybe 711 and 712 end up being together, because the definition issue is something. But we can look at that. But anyways, right now we've got 711, and what's on the table is that Becky and I look at that with any other input people have got, and put something back on the list to see if it meets the requirement. But the objective here, or I should say the only objective, is just to select a term so that we're all talking about the same thing.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bernie. Eberhard has his hand raised. Eberhard.
Okay, my issue was like Bill, we're referring to persons. We're not referring to persons, we're referring to persons and organizations and so on. So that must be, when Becky and you work on it, should be captured.
Okay.
Yes, I agree.
Will do, sir.
Noted. And Becky, your hand is up. Just gone down. Thank you. Continue, Bernie.
All right. Probably the one that generated the most volume of email traffic is 712, the definition of significantly interested parties, or whatever word term we end up selecting. But for the moment, it'll be significantly interested parties. So we have a proposed definition. Significantly interested parties include, but are not limited to, individuals, organizations, companies, associations, educational institutions, and government departments which have a significant and demonstrable interest in the delegation, redelegation, and operation of the CCTLD, or Ds, which is, are associated with their country or territory. The relevant government or territorial authority is automatically considered to be given we got a lot of comments, I'll stop it here and we'll start taking comments and questions and suggestions.
And Bill has his hand raised. So, Bill.
I'm hoping most people on the call saw my email and my concerns about this particular section. It has to do with the real world of CCTLDs as we see them today, many of which have significantly interested parties outside the country or territory associated with the CCTLD. And I think Martin suggested if we were to change the language to remove the mention of the country or territory, that certainly the government department language wouldn't be relevant. On the other hand, I think we should put in a sentence that says interested parties of government departments of the country and the operation of the CCTLD, which is associated with its country or territory. So probably another sentence should go in there to carve out the government role for the within the country or TLD. But the key thing and point I'll make again is that many of us are managing CCTLDs who have minimal, if any, in the case of .NU, I think we may have 8 or 10 domain names registered and operating within the country. The diaspora of Niue has 22,000 Niueans living outside the country and not being Niuean citizens anymore, and they have an interest, of course, as to customers all over the world. So I'm just making a pitch on the phone call to make this modification.
All right, so for point, and your document, we send it out in the summary, we're really looking at removing the last part of the four last sentences, 712, and adjusting accordingly, which is, are associated with their country or territory.
Okay, we're getting quite a bit of noise on the line, so can I remind people who are not speaking to please mute. And I note Becky has a hand raised. Becky.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that we had a few more exchanges following Bill's input, And I think I haven't heard back from Martin, but Bill's suggestion was eliminate the phrase which is or associated with their country or territory, and that's consistent absolutely with our discussion last week. And Martin said, fine, so long as you get rid of the government departments, and then that caused me to say we had to change the note a little bit. So Christina and Gabby and Bernie, I sent to you what I think the language, although I have not heard back from Martin on it, but I think the language that captures what we were talking about, with the one exception I will note that L has square brackets around the word redelegation, is that it would read, the definition of significantly interested parties, include but are not limited to individuals, organizations, companies, associations, educational institutions, and others that have a significant and demonstrable interest in the delegation, square brackets, redelegation, and operation of the CCTLD, stop. The relevant government or territorial authority is automatically considered a significantly interested party, but that's not, you know, exclusive or anything. But that's where it's so Bill, I think that actually does capture it. And then the note that I suggested to slightly modify Bernie's note was that parties other than the relevant government or territorial authority must be able to demonstrate that they are significantly involved in the management, technical, operational, or policy of the local internet domain name system, comma, have a significant commercial interest in the local internet domain name system, comma, or could be significantly affected by the outcome of the request. And I sent around, but I don't know if you guys can post it, what the black line is, and maybe we just need to recirculate it. But I think that we managed to get pretty close with the relevant discussion this afternoon.
Well, thanks, Vicki, and noting Bill has assigned a tick to your comments. So I think some possible continued editing to finesse that might get us into a state of happiness. I note Eberhardt has his hand raised though, so Eberhardt.
I think we can remove the words in the delegation, redelegation, and operation of the CCTLD and leave it and have a demonstrable interest in the CCTLDs.
We'll look at it with Becky and circulate some new text for email discussion. Does that sound okay?
Thanks, Benny.
Noted your point, Al.
Eberhardt's giving that a tick as well, so please continue, Benny.
All right. I think with Becky's posting, we've covered 7121, and so as we say, it'll be a twofer, and that'll be coming at the email list again. Moving on to 713, which is probably the most contentious one relative, may not have generated the most input, but seems to have been the most contentious one. The role of the relevant government or public authority in a delegation or redelegation should automatically be considered to be part of the significantly interested parties unless it specifies otherwise. And that's in the previous clause, so I don't think that that's causing the problem. The one that is at issue seems to be 7132, is responsible for confirming that the proposed manager is acceptable as the trustee of the CCTLD for the nation as per Section 3.2 of RFC 1591, subject to the relevant government or public authority confirming its interest in doing so to IANA. Now, just to be clear, this has been referred to as the Kingmaker Clause and various other things. I think what we were trying to do is capture the realities of what's going on. This is not about there is only the government who can create a CCTLD manager or propose one. This is simply trying to refer to the reality that they can have a veto if they have one on a delegation or a redelegation. So, enough from my side. Let's go at it.
Eberhard, here's the hand raised. So, Eberhard.
It just has to, the whole paragraph has to go. There is no base on any policy document that I know of or have proposed for this. And this is new policy that we are creating, and it just has to go.
Noted. Thank you.
And Bill has just raised his hand. Bill.
I think Eberhard's proposal is probably the simplest way to deal with this. I'm a little concerned that we might consider treating this document, this framework of interpretation, as something that's supposed to capture the realities of what IANA and ICON have been doing since 2000, since the whole basis of the group and the purpose of creating this framework is to sort of set aside the various interpretations and decisions that have been done by ICON and IANA on a non-predictable, unpredictable and kind of loosely determinate basis, and ignore the so-called current realities, or realities of current practice, I guess is a better way to say it, and come up with a framework that is based on the policies that exist that have been agreed to by existing CCTLD managers. And this particular concept that's being described as the reality of the moment is not one that has been agreed on. It's possibly common practice between IANA, ICON, and governments to do this and to give governments a veto, but there's no policy basis for it.
Okay, noted. Any other comments?
I guess, Chris, can I ask you a question, please?
Yes, certainly, Chris.
Bernie, could you... sorry, hang on. That's better. I'm not clear, Bernie, what bit of 1591 or the GAC principles this paragraph seeks to help with.
Okay. We were looking at three... these designated authorities are trustees for the... Oh, sorry about that.
Oops.
I'm back. These designated authorities are trustees for the delegated domain and have a duty to serve the community. The designated manager is the trustee for the top-level domain for both the nation, in the case of a country code, and the global internet community. So, I think we were trying to translate the concern of the designated manager being the trustee for the nation into the fact that those that represent the nation officially is the government, and that's where we went with that.
So you're saying that because there's a clause in 1591 that says that the TLD manager is a trustee, you're extrapolating that out to mean that the trustee for the nation, for the country, for the territory, whatever you want to call it, you're extrapolating that to mean that because of that, and because it's generally accepted that the represent the international or the given representative of the country or territory or nation is the government, that therefore gives the government the right to remove the trustee. Is that what you're saying?
No. We're simply saying they're responsible for confirming the proposed manager is acceptable. So,
where does that come from? Because that's got nothing to do with that. That doesn't. What you read out from 1591 doesn't lead inexorably lead to that at all. That sounds like a bit of a leap to me.
Well, if you're trying to confirm that someone is a trustee, and I'm not arguing this may be a leap here. I'm just saying we're trying to map out that section of 3.2 into something that made sense. So what it's translated to here, or the objective, was that the government has, if you will, significance in the selection of a new manager. Full stop.
Yes, but what you're doing is you're saying, or at least it strikes me, and I don't have a document in front of me because I'm in front of my computer right now, but it strikes me that what you're doing is going one step further. It's perfectly acceptable and logical to say that the government is a significantly interested party, etc., along with a whole heap of other people. And obviously, in the same way that in the ICANN model the GAC advice is taken seriously, the same thing would apply. But the concept that I just think introducing some sort of confirmatory role, I guess I don't see any basis for doing that, I suppose is what I'm saying. Essentially, I don't see any basis for doing that in the clause that you refer to in 1591, and I also don't think there's any basis for doing that contained in the GAC principles.
Okay, well then, the simple thing is just to remove it, and I think that makes everyone happy.
I agree.
I think listening to the discussion, I'd also be in favour of dropping 7.1.3.2, and L's just agreed with that by signifying that with a tick. So yes, I think we've reached some consensus there. So we'll strike 7.1.3.2, and I note Becky and Daniel have just agreed as well. So we'll continue down that path. Thank you, Bernie.
All right, excellent. 714. IANA should remove the procedural requirement of having applicants provide documentation of SIP support for the request and replace it with a public consultation of SIP support for the request. These public consultations should be based on publicly documented procedure, clearly identifying how the consultation will be presented, who such consultations are aimed at, which should be based on the FOI working group interpretation of SIP, what type of input is required, including clearly identifying if they support the request or not, and how this input will be classified. As a subpoint to this, we have classification of SIP input. IANA should develop a clear procedure which would create fair consideration of any valid input provided by weighing the depth, quality, and applicability of the input provided by respondents. This classification should be based on the FOI working group guidelines for SIP. 7142, and I'm going to go through this point as a whole, and then we can beat up on it. Must be in all the ICANN official languages and the administrative languages listed in the ISO 3166-1 for the country or territory. Should allow for confidential replies if requested by the submitter. The applicant for the delegation or redelegation should take a leadership role in its country or territory in encouraging SIP participation in the consultation. The consultation should run for 90 days and should be advertised on the IANA and ICANN websites, as well as any other forum that is considered appropriate by IANA. Those parties submitting input to the consultation and classified by IANA as meeting the criteria for being significantly interested will be considered as representing the significantly interested parties who wish to provide input. 7147. IANA should publish a report on each public consultation, providing a clear analysis of the results. In cases where the initial analysis of the results does not support the request, IANA should have a documented procedure which would permit it to advise the applicant of the situation and allow the applicant to submit a final round of documents within a set time period for consideration by IANA prior to completing its analysis. Evaluation of SIP input for a delegation or redelegation request should be based on relevant, we skipped on in 2715. So 714 basically replaces requesting that the applicant for a delegation or redelegation submit all the SIP input with a public consultation to be carried out by IANA. Open to the floor.
Why, Bernie?
Well, there is a requirement to get in. Well, first of all, what's in the procedures right now is simply a procedural way to get input. It's not documented that the applicant has to supply it. So there's no specific way to get it. And as noted in the issues, if you're simply limiting it to the applicant providing IANA this input, although it does greatly simplify things, you are potentially also limiting who you can hear from when you're trying to get input from significantly interested parties. So in trying to meet the requirement in the policy statements of RFC 1591 and looking at the comments in the GAC principles, it seemed that the easiest thing to do would be to look at doing a public consultation. Now, this clearly goes more into procedures, and I see it as sort of a bit in the twilight zone from interpreting policy and sort of helping IANA define some procedures to work at things better.
I note Eberhardt has his hand raised, so Eberhardt.
This language business, if I can, one of the official languages is in ICANN is Spanish. There is not going to be a public consultation in an English-speaking country in Spanish. This language thing.
What are you saying, Al?
We've lost Al temporarily.
Okay, for the language issue, what we're talking about is we're saying that the consultation should be in all of the ICANN official languages, which they publish their website in currently, and the administrative languages listed
in
3166-1 for the country or territory.
Yeah,
Bernie, it's Chris. It's Chris. Can I suggest that what we do is talk about the principle and not worry too much about the implementation? If we agree the principle that there should be a public consultation, we can worry about languages and all that stuff afterwards. We need to get clear first of all about whether we agree in principle with what you're suggesting.
Sure.
Agree with that assertion, and I note Yap has his hand raised and made the point that. Administrative languages on the 3166 list are often incomplete and obscure. So,
yes, I mean, the list of languages is often made on information that is often guessed by the advisors and whatever. I mean, often there are no official Guyano languages. And then there is also the definition of administrative language, which is a problem. I mean, I remember that in Sweden there are four or five languages which are officially recognized by the government, except the Swedish language itself, the District of. So you're getting a lot of problems if you go into stages.
All right, thank you, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think Chris's point was useful, that if we deal with the principle first, and that it be done, and then we give some extra thinking about the languages and so on. But recognising that ICANN should, in any case, have its policies about publishing in the languages that it currently is committed to publishing in. Anyway, continue, Benny.
Well, I guess we're trying to get input at this point. If people feel it is fair to talk about a public consultation process in trying to get SIP input for delegations and redelegations.
Okay, and I see Becky has her hand raised. So, Becky.
So, I mean, I think that the notion that the applicant has to provide, you know, that all of the input from significantly interested parties or interested parties or whoever they are has to come through the applicant, seems to me to be very problematic. Not only because they may not, you know, because it may be a burden, but also because that's something that can be gained. So it does seem to be that there ought to be another vehicle through which people can be, you know, put on notice that there is, you know, that this is being considered and have an opportunity to raise questions and concerns. And then, you know, if that public notice produces evidence that there is a significant issue, then perhaps you go into a more formal procedure, and I can see a lot of arguments for doing things a lot of different ways, but I guess my fundamental starting point is that, that IANA ought to take input from other sources other than the applicant.
Yeah, I think that was the key point we're trying to get to here.
Yeah, thanks, Becky. I think a question that I might try and direct to Kim if he's on the call still. Would there be any circumstances where a consultation over the length of 90 days may contribute to breaking the internet, as in, you know, you have a manager who's deserted and a broken CCTLD, so you want to achieve the redelegation on a fast track keep that CCTLD up and running. Would this be a bind or a limiter on IANA to expedite a redelegation in such circumstances?
Potentially. But I would say, based on what I understand, there may always be circumstances where whatever the framework of interpretation says, the board may decide it needs to divert from that guidance and could do so long as it's stated clearly and publicly its reasons for doing so. So I suspect it would probably fall into that category where if there was a compelling reason... If this document stated that there must be 90 days consultation, but there was a compelling reason why that needed to be circumvented for some particular reason, I think so long as the ICANN board made it clear the basis and rationale behind why it chose not to do so, that would be consistent with the overall framework. so does that answer the question?
Yeah, perfectly. Thanks.
But I will make an additional point, which is that, you know, my feeling is that, you know, typically we take 3 to 6 months to do a redelegation, and that includes the initial information gathering, staff assessment, scheduling it for the next ICANN board meeting, which only occur every couple of months, and then final authorization and completion. effectively, a provision like this would blow that out in almost all cases by an additional 3 months, if not perhaps four, because you need additional time for further staff analysis and distillation. I have a feeling that some countries wouldn't mind that so long as they knew up front that that was what was ahead of them. But, you know, certainly some countries believe, you know, these kinds of requests should just be done on instruction, and going from 3 to 6 months to 6 to 9 months would just exacerbate their frustration with the process. So I'll just put that out there as an issue.
Yeah, I'm also sort of questioning in my mind where, why 90 days, where that...
Well, that was an arbitrary thing in there just to signify that probably it should be more than 30 days, but definitely went crazy in the details in this part.
Yeah, just thinking along the lines that I think on, if it's something that's not going to happen for another 88 days, I'm not worried about it, and it disappears off my agenda by the time that deadline is looming. So there's nothing like a bit of pressure in terms of time. And 30 to 45 days seems to be a fairly standard hygiene consultation period.
If we're going to say anything, why don't we just say that it's done in the way that ICANN normally conducts its public participation, its public consultations. You don't have to have special rules for this one.
Okay, thanks. Good point, Chris. And Daniel has his hand raised. Daniel. Unmute, Daniel. Daniel, come in. We can't hear you.
All right, so do we have other... While we're waiting for Daniel, what I seem to be getting from this is there's probably some basis, some support for the notion of going to public consultation, let's get rid of the details, and just provide a better generic recommendation up front.
Yep, that sounds like a pretty accurate assessment.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ben.
Excellent. 715, unless we're still on 714.
Daniel's point was that the mention of both IANA and ICANN.
So we'll fix it.
Yeah, in 7.1.4.5.
Anything else?
No, that ICANN languages and ICANN website is the point that Daniel was trying to make. So, noted, Daniel, and we'll look at that. So please continue, Benny.
Okay, 715, evaluation of SIP input for a delegation or redelegation request should be based on relevant government or public authority input and the results of the public consultation. And the reasons that's there is that obviously, I think we've all noted and agreed that governments automatically consider a SIP if they want to. And two, I think we know for a fact governments don't respond to public consultations necessarily and will provide their input. So I don't think we're trying to create anything different here. We're just trying to be very clear as to what kind of, how you should be looking at the input that is provided. Questions, thoughts, comments?
And Bill has his hand up. Bill.
I'm a little concerned about the sort of directive language in this section. I would feel more comfortable with the delegation or redelegation request must take into consideration relevant government public authority and the results of the public consultation.
I'm perfectly happy with that if the rest of the group is also.
It sounds quite reasonable to me, and I am not seeing...
You mail that to me, Bill, so I'm sure I get it right.
Sure.
I'm not seeing any dissent, so we'll take that on board. Thanks, Bill. Continue, Benny.
Hey, we're almost at the end of it, guys. 716. IANA reports on delegations and redelegations should, in order to be effective in communicating relevant information, be consistent and should include the results of IANA's evaluation of SIS support for the request. And that matches the recommendation from consent pretty much as adapted for this context. Questions, thoughts, or comments?
Just going back to the previous point, Daniel made a closing comment that things could get complicated in referring to ICANN and IANA if ICANN is no longer the IANA contractor at some point in the future. So that's worth noting too.
Well, we will have that email discussion in the group on the IANA contractor language, and once we settle on that, we can adjust.
Okay, and it doesn't look like anyone has any comments on 7.1.6. So, anything else in terms of the document, Bernie?
No, we've gone through 7.2 to 7.4, and that's about it. So I think we've gotten some great input. We've got a couple of email discussions, and we should be able to have a new version of the document in time for a week previous to our next meeting. I don't think that should be too much of a stretch.
Okay. Well, given our next meeting is next week, yeah, it's a fairly tight time frame.
Well, may not get the email discussion points, but I should be able to bang out the other key elements for everyone fairly quickly, I hope.
Excellent. Okay, so any final comments or discussion on the document? If not, thank you all for your hard work there, and I think we'll have a document that's close to final, if not final, on the next call. Can we move on to the progress report, document 4 on the agenda? And Bernie, do you want to perhaps not so much talk us through it, but summarise and... yeah, since it is a fairly straightforward progress report, I think.
Yeah, 2 pages, very straightforward. I'm not going to talk about any specific details. We're going to go through the header, FOI working group charter, current status, what we did with terminology, and that we've moved us to the back of the process, consent. Closed off on the first part of our work, going public consultation, valid manager we scrapped, and we're currently working on significantly interested parties that have the results of the public consultation on its recommendations for June 2000, the Czech Republic. Activities in Dakar, OI working group with of the FOI Working Group Progress Report and Public Consultation Working Group Meeting on 27 October from 1 till 4, I am told. And that's about it, sir.
Thank you. Are there any comments or questions on the Progress Report? I don't think there's been any comments on the list at all regarding the progress report, so I think we should consider it final, and then we can progress it through publishing on the open website for Dakar. Can we then move on to the consultation on the consent documents? And again, I think this is document 5 on the agenda, and again, Benny, without going through it in detail, because it is largely a repetition of the consent document that we have agreed, and it just indicates the actual process of consultation. If you can give us a quick look through, and hopefully we could consider this a final review as well.
Thank you. Really, there is no new material in this document beyond the 5 questions that are being asked. So all of it is cut and paste from existing documents. There may have been minor edits to shoehorn it into the format that we've got and that is required by ICANN for public consultations. But the questions are really the only thing that's new here. And I'll go through them with you right now. Is the approach used by the FOI working group satisfactory? Number 2, is the documentation that was analyzed to identify the issues comprehensive? Number 3, do the issues identified by the FOI working group for this topic capture the major problems associated with the topic? If not, what is missing? Number 4, are the proposed guidelines effective solutions to the issues that were identified? Item 5, are the recommendations effective in addressing the concerns raised in the final report of the DRDWG regarding this topic? And after that, blah, 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 you're requested to submit your comments, if any, by this date to this email address. So that is the only new material in all of that. It takes about 30 pages to lay it all out because we do put in the original consent document and we put a lot of wrapping around it. But this is it. Over to you, sir.
Well, it doesn't appear... Oh, there does appear to be a question. I have Bill with a question. Bill.
Yeah, I'm just... maybe I didn't read this closely enough, but I'm trying to figure out exactly which community of all the communities are we seeking input from on this.
We're not targeting any specific community. I think we're
all of them.
Yeah, we're targeting the ICANN community to give us input.
Well, I guess the question is how are we facilitating that? Is this going to be posted on the ICANN? I guess they have a site where different stuff is, or are we going to be communicating directly with the different
reporting
organizations with formal requests for feedback, or what's the deal?
Usually the way it works, this is a formal consultation from the CCNSO, which will be put up on the ICANN public consultation website, will be announced on the front page as per all public consultations when they're brought up, and a notice will be sent out to various emailing lists of communities that we know have an interest that the consultation has gone up. And it will be included in our presentations when we present things in Dakar.
Okay, to that's both sensible.
Yeah, both the CCNSO and the GAC at Dakar and anyone who comes along to the FOI working group meetings. So that's the normal process that we followed with the DRD working group public consultations.
Yes, it's the same.
Thank you.
Okay. So I think given again that this has been on the list at least since Monday and people have had an opportunity to comment on this and on this call, and since there's nothing new and since nobody is challenging any of the questions, we could consider this also to be a final document and get it out for publication. I guess we could do that by tomorrow, could we, Bart?
It will take some processing time, so I guess it, say, as soon as, say, it's signed off, it will take Monday, Tuesday to be posted.
Okay.
Well, internal stuff first.
Well, I'll suggest to the working group that both the progress report and the consultation on consent document be considered final and invite any final dissent from that position. I'll determine that everybody's in agreement and we'll proceed to the public consultation stage. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Bert. And thank you, Bernie, for all of that. Now, the only remaining agenda item is our meeting schedule, and we have another call due next Thursday, 13 October at 0500 UTC, and that will be just to finalise our reporting and presentations for Senegal. And then at Dakar, there's a meeting on the Sunday afternoon for 1 hour, and then a potential 4 hour meeting on the Thursday, the
3 hour.
3 hours. So hopefully everyone has those meetings in their diary, and we'll talk again with everybody next week. Is there any other business? Does anyone? Ah, I see. Eberhard has his hand raised. Eberhard.
Two things. Christina, can you please, again, also for the ICANN meetings in for the meetings in Dakar, send out these calendar items? I find them very helpful. And secondly, I want to say again, this Adobe stuff is getting fairly useful now. It's reaching the point where one can actually use it.
Yes, I think getting more and more useful all the time, Eberhard, and working much more smoothly than it has in its early days. Okay, if there's nothing else from anyone, no other items of general business, I'll declare the meeting closed and thank you all for your participation and talk to you all again next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye.